Welcome to the Continuing Education Podcast for CASA Volunteers, connecting you with experts who can advance your advocacy for children and families. I'm your host, Maggie Halpin, and this is CASA On The Go.
Welcome back, everybody. It's a true honor to have with me today the deeply insightful Cindy Dyer, who is director of the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid Family Defense Project. And Cindy has represented parents involved in child welfare cases and practiced child welfare law for more than a decade. And one thing that I really admire about you, Cindy, is just the level of authenticity that you bring, the collaborative spirit that you bring, and the strength of commitment to your clients that you bring to this work. So really delighted to get to have this conversation with you and talk about, you know, creating effective working relationships between CASA advocates and parents' attorneys. Would you share a little about your background and maybe a little bit about the work of the Family Defense Project?
Sure. First of all, thank you for saying those lovely things. It's really wonderful to be here. So I just appreciate you having me. As far as my background, I'm not a native Texan, but I moved here after law school for my first attorney job at Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, where I'm at now. I did leave legal aid, and for about 10 years, I was with the Travis County Offices of Child Representation, representing children on cases for 4 years, and then the Office of Parent Representation, representing parents for about 6 years, before I came back to legal aid in 2021 to start the Family Defense Project. And just really quickly, the focus of the Family Defense Project, first of all, we're one of the three legal aid providers in Texas, and our service area for our legal aid covers roughly all the way from El Paso through Austin over to Corpus Christi and south with all the border counties. So we cover 68 counties in a very, a varied number of counties with really different practices for child welfare within each of those counties. What our focus on as a legal aid program is representing, and right now we're parents only because we have a limited number of attorneys. Hopefully, eventually we can move into representing other parties on cases, but right now we're parents only. And we focus on representation at the stages of DFPS intervention when a parent is not otherwise entitled to a lawyer. And so what that comes down to is our pre-petition practice, or also known as early defense practice, is representing parents on actual CPS investigations or CPI investigations, as well as family-based safety services, which is the ongoing out-of-court monitoring of service completion. We also do administrative reviews and then parental reinstatements, because those are the areas, again, when you're not entitled to a court-appointed attorney. We do, however, also pick up and substitute into court cases, both TMC or Chapter 262 cases, as well as court-ordered services or Chapter 264 cases. So we each carry a caseload of those as well.
Wow. So awesome to know that you're like standing in that gap for parents who are, having systems involvement, but don't have that, automatic access.
Yeah. And I think it's because so much of the Texas child welfare funding, at least right now, and understandably so, is focused on the court representation, since that's when you're statutorily entitled to a court appointed attorney. So that's what needs to be funded. But having done that work for a decade within the court system, my focus and my energies were always, wow, if only this family had been able to talk to an attorney before they ended up here. In so many of those cases at the court stage, I just had those thoughts on both sides of the aisle over the years. And when the opportunity came to provide representation at that stage, it's been fascinating the involvement we've had and what we can be doing on those cases before they reach the court phase. But because so much of what happens there is informed and affected by the court phases, that's also why we pick up those cases, just so we are aware of every stage of intervention, what is currently going on in the systems.
Yeah. And it's like, just very cool that you have experience work like representing children as well as representing parents, and just bring that kind of more like just holistic view.
Yeah, I think it's so important, right, to really have that understanding of thinking through representation on each side of the case. And I'm just really grateful, both for the cases I worked when I represented children for several years, but also the knowledge I built from understanding how to think about things from that side. And I think it's really informed and fueled my practice representing parents.
Having worked on cases myself, I really just know that parents' attorneys play such an incredibly important role in the process. And for CASAs, just how important it is to collaborate effectively with parents' attorneys. And when it comes to authentic family engagement efforts, which are really at the heart of whole child advocacy, we need to be collaborating well with parents as well as with the attorneys who are representing their interests. So I'm curious, what advice would you give CASA advocates for building positive collaborative working relationships with the parents you represent, and also for building strong working relationships with parents' attorneys?
Definitely. So I think the first thing I'll say is, it's all about the approach for me as a parents' attorney. I understand we all are representing different parties and people on the case, that we all have different duties per the family code on the case. And I don't think we have to agree on everything, right? For me, with a CASA, it's always, are they approaching this case with an open mind? Do they already have you set from jump just from reading an affidavit that if you've handled more than one case, you have to understand that never is the full picture and is often not fully accurate, right? Have they already made up their mind without ever talking to my client or talking to any of the family? Is there an understanding that likely the parents on most of these cases, if not all, have experienced their own trauma? And if they were 2 years younger, would we be treating them totally differently if they were 17 versus 19, right? So to me, it's all about the approach, because again, I don't expect with dueling interests that we are going to see or view things from the same way. But what I have to see is that you understand every family is different. Even if you've worked a ton of cases, no family is the same, no case is the same. And if you're bringing in opinions and feelings, of course, you're going to use your previous history and your experience to inform what you're doing and how a system works. But if you're holding previous cases and families against the current one that we're working, that's going to be problematic. So I think it all for me is the same theme. I don't expect agreement. I don't expect you to necessarily see things from our side, but are you approaching this case truly trying to understand what's going on, what this family needs, what happened in this family, and what we can all do in our individual roles to hopefully achieve family reunification? But if not family reunification, what else are you open to and what else are you exploring? And so as far as a professional, again, these are county systems where a lot of us have worked together for a lengthy period of time. We're human beings. We're going to have emotions about cases, and sometimes those can turn heated, right? But it's not about us as the professionals. And I think that is hard for all of us who do this work, right, full time. But it's not about us as professionals. And so if we are approaching these cases because we have beef with the other professionals on the cases, and that's our focus instead of the family, that to me is all going to make for not a great relationship. So again, it comes down for me, not for agreement, not for you having to agree with my side, but to understand where my client is coming from as their own individual person, right? And treating this as an open-minded understanding from the beginning and truly exploring all options.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Emphasis on bringing an open mind and really checking any pre-existing biases or assumptions about the people that we're walking alongside, and really being willing to meet them as a human being who's so much more than what's described in that affidavit. That might be our first introduction, to them, and it's not the whole story, and it's definitely not a strength-based document. So
it's not. And I don't think we have to say it's all wrong either, right? But I think if you start a case with the broadest approach, I understand that by the time of trial, everyone is going to be pitted in their corners and have narrowed what their requests are and what their beliefs about best interest are. But if you start a case that way, it's both problematic to me about approaching these cases, but it's also, you're going to miss out on really creative options and opportunities that could be available on a case if you start from closed-minded what you want to happen on the case, even though it's the first month, right? And I say this as someone who has to check myself on these things too. So.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, building on that, like, looking at like how we approach building our relationships with parents from the very beginning and throughout the case as it's unfolding, I feel like so much is conveyed in the questions that we ask. So for a CASA volunteer to ask a parent, you know, like, what concerns do you have right now that I might be able to help you address? Or how are you feeling about the services that you're being asked to participate in? Are there other resources or supports that might be valuable to you? Or just open-ended questions that really acknowledge that, like, I know that you, the parent, you are the expert in your own life. And I'm here to, I want to listen to your hopes and concerns. I'm curious, like, if you were making a list of crucial questions for CASAs to draw on in visiting with the parent, are there questions that you would include on that list?
Well, I like the ones you already just said. but yeah, I think... I what you're saying about the open-ended questions without assuming, right, what the response should be. And then this sounds so ridiculous to say, but then actually having a conversation based on what those answers are instead of just, I have to ask these 10 questions because that's what my supervisor said I needed to put in the report. Ask those questions too, right? But really approaching it as a conversation and not I'm trying to get information for this one specific purpose because I know this is what I want to happen at the hearing and I need the parent to say these things so that I can ask for that. Again, not trying to assume what the outcome should be when getting to know the parent and asking those questions. So just off the top of my head, what do you want for your child's future? What on this case can we do to work towards that? Where do you want your child placed? But, you know, why do you want them there? Talk to me about what the relationship is. What is good about that home? What are three important things that you want me to know, about what is going on with you right now? If you could change anything about what's currently going on with access to your child, what would it be? What are your child's strengths? How do we support those strengths while your child's not living with you? What would you like to work on regarding your relationship with your child? How can I help you do that? What's the most frustrating thing about our case that you want to talk to me about right now? What are your ideas to fix it? What do you hope could be different, right? And again, I don't have suggested answers for any of those things. And if I had a CASA asking my client those things, I'm not concerned about any of that, right? Because to me, that indicates we're trying to see what is actually going on outside of the scope of these, again, 10 things that I have to ask you about medical and educational history and, you know, the standard lists we all ask all the time.
Those are really great questions. Thank you for those. I want to write them all down. Yeah. And yeah, moving beyond like, yeah, we're not just looking to gather information just to put it in a report, but really, I mean, that is part of what we do is gather information for reports to the court, for sure. And like, we want to be building like real rapport and real like working relationships with the people that were getting to be part of their lives at this like really, really difficult moment, so that we can best like advocate for the best interests of their child. So parents typically know their kids best. So how can we partner with the parent to, it's just like, I think such a critical part of what we're here to do.
Absolutely. And by asking those things, it's not about, you know, having someone spill all of their guts to you and then feeling weird about it because you're there for the best interest of the child, right? And I think, but it's truly about establishing a relationship and rapport so that you can get to what the best interests of the child are. And I know sometimes people feel a little funky about going off script with parents, but I think it's the only way to truly establish those relationships and hopefully be working towards some of the same goal.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, you know, we know that reunification, whenever that can safely occur, like that's going to be in the best interest of the child. And so, like, doing everything in our power to be, you know, within the scope of our role, to be supporting that, like helping this family heal and move forward. And part of that is like getting to know their parents and like asking those kinds of questions that help us understand, like, yeah, what, like, how are you doing? What kind of support, you know, do you need while we're like in this case, and have like resources and supports available? So we're mandated, CASAs are mandated to be in contact with parents every single month. And I think, you know, that like everything we've been talking about, that's really crucial that we are like proactively trying to stay in communication, like have open communication with parents about like how they're doing, what they might need to keep moving forward. Would you talk about what you might recommend when parents' attorneys are hesitant to allow CASA to contact their clients?
Maybe not everyone would be comfortable with this, but I would first ask why, right? I'm a big proponent of direct communication in a system where people often speak around the actual issues. And so is this the attorney's practice on every case or just this one? Because if it's just this one, there's likely a reason why. Either a supervisor issue, a volunteer issue, something the client said about they're not comfortable with talking to the CASA alone, right? So again, if it's a pattern of the attorney, I'll get into how I would handle that. If it is a one-off, I would ask why. And again, it's not about the professionals in the system, right? But it does turn into that. So is there something that can be resolved, right? Did something happen on a previous case that makes the attorney untrusting of the CASA? It's happened to me before, right? I've done that before. It is not my standard practice by any means. But I have done that before when I have felt like a volunteer in previous cases, made up their mind about a parent early on and then used all of their monthly contacts to build a case against the parent, right? And so when that had happened on more than one case, I'm going to step and insert myself into the situation. But that's not common for me, right? And so I want my parent clients to establish a relationship with a CASA volunteer. I've seen CASA volunteers do amazingly creative things on cases that have totally changed the direction and nature of how a case has gone. And so if it's possible to do that in a safe way for my client, I am supportive. But if it's not safe for my client, I'm not going to allow that either, right? The difference is I would probably have a conversation with the supervisor about why, just so they were aware. And so again, I think it's, you know, figure out, is this a practice or not? And then if it's the attorney's practice, okay. So what can you do about that? Fine. Loop them into every meeting. Don't just make it a virtual meeting either, right? Ask to do in person, because if you're going to have a third person sitting there for the meeting, that does take away from rapport. So I would say, great, can we meet this day and time? And then you all can meet together. And then I would continue on asking my questions as a volunteer of the parent in that situation to demonstrate and show this is kind of what I would be asking every month, right? Like, you're welcome to come to all these meetings, but if you don't want to, here's what I'm asking. And that's the other thing I was going to say, right? I've definitely limited if I'm not part of those meetings, which again, I don't want to be part of all of those meetings because I think it takes away from establishing the relationship, but I will limit what the volunteer can talk to my client about. Right. Especially if there is, for instance, ongoing criminal cases, if there are things where I know that whatever my client says is going to be used in future hearings in an adverse way about specific things on the case or specific instances or incidents, I guess I should say, then I'm going to say you can talk about whatever you want except these three things. Right. And so I will put that in writing and send an email and say that so that I can use it later if I need to, but hope that those things won't be discussed. So I don't think it all has to be black or white. I think it's figuring out if there's an issue between the professionals, right, leading to this, and then working to resolve that. If that's not an option and this is a common practice, then I think it's asking what's off limits for conversations and doing as much as you can. I do not think if an attorney wants to be there, that should mean that there is no meeting or there is no discussion.
Yeah, thanks. That's super helpful. And I feel like, yeah, just what you said about sometimes in the system, it feels like there's a need for more direct communication and just like, yeah, sometimes like just like what you're saying, like, well, let's talk about why, like, what's the underlying concern and can we resolve it and how can we like move forward picking up the phone. Like sometimes I feel like so much communication happens over email in this field, and so that's great because people are really busy, like, you know, we want to respect each other's time. And then also sometimes I feel like things can get, I don't know, it's like how people become more irritated with each other when they're driving because there's just like more distance between you, you know, when you're like emailing versus like just giving someone a call to say like, hey, you know, I'm hearing that like you have a concern. I'm wondering if it's something we can talk more about.
Absolutely. And again, I just think working in a world where everyone has a lot of feelings around everything that because we're also humans and we're obviously passionate about our work or we would not be in these roles, right? It's definitely not because of the money. And so I think that, no, but it just in acknowledging that, I get it. We are all passionate in these roles. And so I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from being that. I'm just trying to say sometimes we get in our own way and to the detriment of the families we're supposed to be working towards helping on cases. And so again, I'm not ridiculous. I know that you cannot resolve every conflict but I am just, after doing this work for so long, the only way that I can sleep at night is feeling like on each case we tried everything and that at the end of the day, the only option was whatever happened, right? Because I need to be able to feel okay doing this work and going to bed at night. And so I think that's kind of bled into how I deal with professionals on cases too, right? Again, we're not going to agree on everything, but can we have an open dialogue about it so that we fully understand each other's positions and realize there is no way we're going to be able to reach an agreement. And that's okay, because I understand where you're coming from, even if I don't agree with it, right? And so I think that bleeds down to as minor of things as the monthly conversations with parents as well.
Yeah, I'm really hearing like a, just like a team mindset in what you're saying. Like, yeah, even though we all have different roles on the team and like may not always be agreeing for, you know, whatever the reason is, like we're still working as a team. We're the team that this, the when it, like in a professional sense, like we're the team of professionals that like this family has been given in this process. And so we need to like see each other, like, yeah, interact with one another as like team members.
Yeah. And I know I've had issues with the team concept before, and I know plenty of others do too, right? So I don't think it's all get along, right? I just think it's understanding that because of our previous interactions or seeing people in court and things like that. And I mean, this is litigation, right? And a lot of us attorneys can be really aggressive, right? So I'm not setting that aside. And plenty of people have worked cases with me that can talk about that, right? And so I don't want to mislead anyone to think that I'm talking about a team approach in the sense of we must all come together on things. In litigation, when kids have been removed, these are going to be hotly contested cases. And I am okay with that, right? Because again, it is a court system. I think for me, where I'm going with it all and processing out loud as I'm going there, it's not about the professionals. And I, again, really think that so much of what happens in these cases is because of the professionals' feelings around things. So I think where I'm going is setting aside some of those feelings and focusing on the family. And so I'm not anti-team. I just want to be incredibly clear that I also understand lots of cases can't go that way. But we can be open-minded on every case. And we can look at every case with new eyes.
Yeah, I hear you. It's complicated. And to not like, yeah, let like anyone's ego become the focus, and that it really is like, we're here to walk alongside this family, each in our own specific role, and that can look really different. And I still you know, just want to emphasize, like, from the CASA perspective for our network, like, when we like approach working with parents' attorneys, with parents, like, as like really important stakeholders in the process, and we want to have strong communication with people and like do our best to build rapport with folks, that's gonna help us do our job the best we can.
Absolutely, because CASA is so important on these cases, and have a really the ability to have such a unique perspective on families that others, by the nature of their duties, might not always get to, right? And so I just think there's so much that can be done by approaching cases certain ways, right? And again, not to say that set outcomes have to happen, but it just can really change how a case goes and what the options are at the end of the day when you have open-minded volunteers.
And I think we have to, I'm just thinking too of the power dynamic, Cindy, with parents and like how I might feel if I was a parent involved in a CPS case and a volunteer, a CASA volunteer, like, which I may have never heard of before, you know, like was reaching out to introduce themselves to me or like, you know, set up a time to meet with me, and just like how wary I might feel of that person to begin with. And so I think we really need to work hard to like show that we are coming into this with an open mind and with a real commitment to trying like our best, if they're willing, you know, to get to know like their needs and concerns and how we might best work together with them as we're advocating for the best interest of their child. So.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, right? Understanding that by the time a parent's had their kids removed from their care, this likely was not their first CPS case or system involvement, right? And so understanding by the time they're meeting the volunteer, the wariness, I think, is spot on that you said. But I've seen some beautiful relationships on families on these cases, and I think it's possible. Again, I don't think that has to be the goal in every case, and that's not what I'm advocating for. I've just seen some things naturally come to fruition with CASA investing in those relationships with parents and families. And again, I know it's not possible in every case. I know sometimes we have cases with really difficult facts where the plan is not reunification. I understand all of those things. But on the majority of cases, I think there's just a lot that CASA can do by their approach.
Yeah. So kind of building on that, because like just talking a lot about like the importance of relationships in like our working relationships, you know, at Texas CASA, we're like committed to moving away from business as usual in the child welfare system, which means like balancing what has been like, I think like a longstanding emphasis on like completion of services for parents with also emphasizing like partnering with the family to meet the unmet needs, you know, that they're facing and strengthen a network of permanent supportive relationships around the child and their parents. So really also valuing like how important it is that people have the support that they need to heal and move forward. And one of the central goals of collaborative family engagement is increasing the number of like safe adults serving as a natural lifelong support for parents and children involved with CPS. So CASA advocates, caseworkers, you know, can be trained in using family engagement tools to empower like the children and parents we're walking alongside to share their stories, their goals, and identify who is important to them. And I just like, yeah, I just feel that that opens things up and like really deepens the work that we're doing and its effectiveness so much. And parents' attorneys are, I think, a really important partner in that work too, and always welcome, you know, to be there with their clients if they're gonna do a connectedness or engagement tool with their CASA or caseworker. And I'll link in the episode details, we have some awesome resources like for attorneys who might not be familiar with collaborative family engagement or CFE tools, we have a great video and some other resources. But just like reflecting on all of this from your perspective, Cindy, like representing parents, would you talk about like the difference that you see in working with professionals who are deeply invested in ensuring that your clients not only have like the services needed to address unmet needs, but also that like network of relationships supporting them as they heal and move forward?
Yeah. First of all, I'm into that approach. You can spot a CASA program supervisor or volunteer who's adopted that approach a mile away, right? It's evident in the questions asked. It's evident in the court reports. It's evident in the interactions with the family. It's evident on the positions taken. And it's evident from breaking from CPS on some of those positions. And so super on board. When I was at Travis County, the early family engagement, I think, started with one of the pilots there. And it was just so impressive. And so basically how they had structured, and this is outdated what I'm saying, but how they had structured that was doing the full-on family finding search before the adversary hearing to look for alternate placements. And
like if the child was in foster care, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, I should have qualified that. If the child was in an unrelated foster home, it would be searching. And I forget the database and the tools they used for everything, but it was impressive, right? And coming to court with different options of tangible people that they had both reached out to, followed up with, established a connection with, and put forward as a placement option. And then in many of those cases, advocating for placement when the department couldn't agree, right? If a home study wasn't done or whatever else, and CASA standing up there and making those arguments because they had vetted the family. I cannot tell you the nature, what a game changer that is, right? And so, yeah, it's all about approaching a case with options, kind of what I've been saying, right? I get at the end of the case, you're going to have winnowed it down, but why doesn't everyone on any side of the aisle want to have naturally explored every possible option for this family before going to termination and unrelated adoption? Again, excusing some of the cases, which I understand and have worked, where there aren't options. But again, that's a much smaller percentage than many people understand. So accepting those cases, right? Why would we not all want to approach it that way, right? And it still boggles my mind that there are people out there and advocates involved in this system who don't approach it that way, when all the research and studies and everything else that both you and I could probably speak ad nauseum about support that. And so I love it. It's also reality, right? And I think that's one of those things you have to balance what is going on in a case and the limited time we have to work it with reality. So sure, in a case, we can tell everyone, all these people on your case, in your family and your friends aren't allowed to supervise you or be around the kids because of all of this background and things like that, right? And then stepping aside and realizing that's reality for many parents in this system, right? Who had generations of system involvement. So everyone they have in their life is not going to be approved by the department to be able to be around and supportive of the family. But are those really that background that we're pulling from 15 years ago, from 10 years ago, from 5 years ago, whatever, that's really prohibitive? It's only prohibitive to the department. It's not prohibitive to everyone else on the case. And so the CASAs who truly understand that, what happens in the year to year and a half on the case is not reality for the family, right? And then working with family and friends who might not otherwise be approved by the department to really vet and see, can this family and friends be safe and stable and part of the case plan that we can advocate for? And so, again, it's all about the open-mindedness, but it's about the dose of reality of what this family is going to look like after the case is closed too. So why are we trying to force something else for this year and the year and a half that really doesn't have a basis in common sense when the involvement's done? Does that make sense? I feel like I just went on a long rambling spiel.
It does. And I mean, it's something that I'm like hearing from what you're saying too is like, yeah, when we're, we want to like engage with the people in this child, the people who care about this child.
Yes.
The people who care about this parent. And for sure, like not being quick to dismiss people because of their, you know, what their record is. that may be a serious concern. That's something that's worth investigating, but it's not something that we want to be writing people off, or certainly like, yeah, jumping to conclusions about like that this person is defined by something on that piece of paper. We want to like get to know them and like see who they are as a person now, and that they, and really seeing the connections, the people in this like constellation of like in that child's village as more than just placement options too. Like, of course that's really important, especially if the child's living with strangers that they don't know. For sure, research shows that they're gonna have a lot more fault safety, and if they're with like a safe person that they already do know in their own network. And thinking beyond placement too, that just having, being connected to more people, you know, that they, who love them, is so important. And for parents too, having that support, that sense of like, I'm not just sitting in this meeting with my attorney. I mean, that's like, yes, that's a really important, like to have that representation and that advocate, of course. And like, who else can we like engage with? Can we build relationships with to bring them to the table so that you're not sitting there, you know, with only one supporter, so that your supporters outnumber the professionals in the room? Because like you said, Cindy, like what's going to happen when the professionals aren't involved anymore? This is a temporary, you know, intervention. And so our goal is like working towards strengthening the permanent real team, like their real team in their real life of people who love them and love their child.
Exactly. Exactly. So two things from what you just said. I think the first is you said it way better, right? Than I did, just about you want to fully investigate and you want to be able to fully look at this. And that just kind of goes with the theme of what I've been saying during this entire discussion of, it's okay with me if you do your full investigation and then come out with a position that is adverse to mine, because you did everything to come up with your own informed position on why that might not be safe, right? In whatever community support that's looking like. So again, it's setting aside those preconceived notions, or this is what this paper is telling me about this family member or this friend who's here, right? It's telling me about this, but I don't need to ask any questions or find out what's currently going on in their life or what the rest of the story is around these things, right? And so I think that's the first thing. And then I think it just goes back to, it's not, how is it that we are trying to tell someone what their community is, right? In the year or year and a half that we're working with the family. And I think any additional supports CASAS can come up with that are long-term supports for the family that can be introduced during the case is a super bonus. But at the end of the day, right, most people are coming into these cases with established communities. And so it's truly figuring out what in there we can be supportive of and make work for long-term for the family, because that is the reality of what it's going to look like when we're out of their lives. And we don't want return cases, right? We want to strengthen what already exists.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's all just so connected, like getting to a place with the parent where you can sit down and do like a connectedness map to, yeah, not tell them like who exists in their support network, but to like learn from them who, you know, might be in their support network that could be like brought to the table to support them through this process. To be able to like get to a point where you can do that, that starts with building rapport from the beginning. And that starts with like the way we show up, the questions that we're asking, and just, yeah, an open mind and an open heart too.
Yes.
Well, Cindy, it's been so wonderful talking about all of this with you. Any last words that you want to say before we wrap up?
No, just thanks for having me. I just really genuinely enjoy having these discussions and learning from you as well. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. Awesome. Well, yeah, just so delighted for folks to get to learn a little bit from your vast experience working in the system. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to CASA On The Go. Join us next time for more dynamic continuing education brought to you by Texas CASA.